Welcome to EAA's Salute to Veterans. The men and women who have fought all of our wars since independence, creating and defending our freedoms. We also honor tonight all those who have kept the peace between wars, including the Cold War. And we celebrate with gratitude the men and women on the home front who have supported and loved those in uniform. All of our uniformed services are represented this evening. This we'll defend. That's the motto of the United States Army. The oldest branch was created by the Continental Congress on June 14, 1775. George Washington, the general of the army, commanded that, quote, the forces be raised in defense of American liberty. At its creation, the Continental Army force was already forceful because it had fought in the French and Indian War. The army has gone from muskets to the high-tech capabilities of the 21st century. Over 1 million men and women now serve active duty in the Army, the National Guard, and the Army Reserves. I have not yet begun to fight. These words were uttered in the battle in 1779 by the man considered to be the father of the United States Navy, John Paul Jones. The first Navy warship was actually launched in Massachusetts in 1632 to fight pirates. It was christened the Blessing of the Bay. The Navy has gone from wooden sailing ships to ironclads and steam, to oil burners and nuclear power, with supersonic aircraft and missile-launching submarines joining in. Jones is interred in the Navy Chapel at Annapolis, the United States Navy. Leathernecks, the Marines have landed. The situation is well in hand, unquote. The United States Marine Corps. The Marines' job is to be first in harm's way. Marines have landed on more than 300 foreign shores since the Corps was created in November 1775. They operate on land, sea, and air. John Philip Sousa wrote the Corps March, Semper Fidelis, Semper Fi, the United States Marine Corps. Off we go into the wild blue yonder, the United States Air Force in 1908. The Army's Aeronautical Division bought its first airplane from the Wright brothers for $30,000. It flew 42.5 miles per hour. Its first tactical flight was against Mexican bandits. Eddie Rickenbacker and Billy Mitchell led the way in World War I and after. In 1947, the Army Air Corps became the United States Air Force, from balloons to cloth-covered airplanes with propellers, to metal aircraft, to supersonic jets, rockets, and into space. The United States Air Force owns the skies. Finally, Semper Paratus, always ready, always prepared. It was Alexander Hamilton who founded the United States Coast Guard in 1790. It patrols the waterways, protects our ports and ships, and enforces sea laws. Maritime safety, maritime security, the emergency sea force. It has rescued thousands from disasters, saved billions worth in property from floods and shipwrecks. The Coast Guard goes to sea under the worst conditions imaginable, which led the Coast Guard to this motto, you have to go out, but you don't have to come back. The United States Coast Guard. The accomplishments of our armed forces for more than 235 years are beyond extraordinary. Our veterans' performance reflects their passion to have committed themselves, including giving their lives, to protect our freedoms. Their personal sacrifice cannot be described in words. 1775, Massachusetts, in today's movie quote lingo, you might say, quote, they were mad as hell and they weren't going to take it anymore. No representation in Parliament, then we won't pay your taxes. But that was only part of it. That was the spark. Lexington, Concord, April 19, 1775, first shots fired. Our revolt, our revolution was on. And over the next 8 years, much of that time only barefoot, starving, freezing, and sick, armed with only muskets and bayonets, the farmer, tradesman, and school-aged young man army defeated the most powerful army and navy on the planet. In 1783, Benjamin Franklin, John Adams, and John Jay signed the treaty with Britain, sealing our independence, our birth of freedom. Over the next several years, with George Washington presiding, a handful of brilliant men wrote the most remarkable documents of governance ever conceived, the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. The Declaration of Independence was the promise, the Constitution was the fulfillment. For the first time in history, power in government would flow up from us, not down from a king. And our Constitution is an umbrella of opportunity for each and every one of us. Our personal freedoms are the very core of the Constitution. We can worship or not. We can petition the government to fix things we don't like. We can pretty much say, write, do anything we want in public or private without the powerful, the government, pushing us around, and this government protects us and allows us to flat out go for it, to try to make the most of our lives. We are so privileged, we are so blessed to be Americans and live in America. For over two centuries, who has made this possible? You have. You veterans and all of the veterans who came before you. After the Revolution came the War of 1812, the British again. In the 1860s, we fought amongst ourselves in two different color uniforms. More people died in the Civil War than in any of our other wars. America cracked, but it didn't break. As Lincoln said, we are the last best hope of man. World War I, World War II, Korea, bad people wanted to take away freedom from us and from others as well, take away our great nation, our independence, and with our allies, you, including many of you who are here tonight, prevailed so that we could be here tonight. And then there was Vietnam, and now Iraq and Afghanistan. It's been said that democracy is not a spectator sport. All of you veterans and all those who have gone before you were not and are not spectators. You've dedicated yourselves to protecting our freedoms. EAA salutes you with gratitude for your devotion to service and duty, your lives of sacrifice. You honor our great nation. A few have been there in harm's way, fighting for our freedoms, in World War II and other wars since then, and they are here to share some of their memories from days way back and some very, very recent days. So please welcome the first of our guests. He is Chuck Downey. He was the youngest naval aviator in World War II. He was 18 years old when his wings of gold were pinned on, and that was just a few months younger than his fellow aviator in Pensacola, George H.W. Bush. He flew dive bombers in the Pacific Fleet, the Dauntless and the Helldiver. He was decorated with the Distinguished Flying Cross and Air Medal. In 1964, at the age of 39, he was the youngest officer in the United States Navy to be selected for captain. He continues flying today. He restores antique airplanes. He was inducted into the Illinois Aviation Hall of Fame in 1995. Please welcome Navy Captain Chuck Downey.
Good evening, everyone. I'm sure happy to be here. Not long for my 86th birthday, still flying. I guess that's a tribute to not only the EAA, all the aviation lore people said about me. Well, Chuck, that's aviation is your passion. I guess I started out cutting my fingers about 7 years old in Stratford, Connecticut, home of Sikorsky, watching the testing of the S-42, the beginning of the flying boat era. So stretching back this far, I thank God I have a fairly good memory so I can recite what happened. But I only learned years later that this flying boat passing back and forth, they were running endurance tests, flying all the way over to the Hudson River and coming back several times during the day from Stratford. But range is range, and you know, distance is distance. And it kind of impressed on me that it would be an exciting thing to do. Well, it didn't take long before Igor Sikorsky himself presented me with 3 out of 4 trophies 1 year as the youngest, I guess, junior contestant in the Connecticut model airplane system back in those years. This was about 1939 or 40. So soon I was watching the young men of Britain flying over their land, saving against the Nazi invader, presumably to invade, but they were fending him off, and I knew the winds of war were going to blow pretty hard, so I knew I was going to be in flying. Well, it didn't take long to determine in 1942, as a graduate, that we were all going to be in the war somehow. So fast forward, I wound up, as David just said, being fortunate. I wanted to be a mechanic on an aircraft carrier after the Battle of Midway, but I said, no, they said, you've got a little more steam than that. Well, time would tell. And through the years, I've flown about 40 different airplanes. 22 or 3 of them were in the Navy. And I met a young owner, a new owner of a Corsair, a very nicely restored one, just about an hour ago. And he lives at an airport where I once did. It's an FG-1D. It may be in my logbook because I have a couple of 100 hours, but the exciting part of the war for me was to be a dive bomber pilot, and that's what I did. The Dauntless was the better airplane as far as diving could go, because Richard Best has remarked you could wear the darn thing, you climb in it. Now, the Helldiver was not that same kind of an airplane, but the next and best airplane that I flew was the Corsair. That was a real honest-to-God airplane. But through the years, you wind up with... So aviation is with you all around, and David, if I'm talking too long, shut me off. But I'm enthusiastic about aviation. It's right here. I heard Tom Poberesny, a year ago, at a small luncheon with some other greats, one of the greats, Pat Packard, who did the mural in the Eagle Hangar. But he mentioned this thing. He said, well, EAA is a family environment. It's grown by these many, many years, and that's certainly true. And I remember when this was a nothing place. This theater wasn't even here when I first came in that old Myers OTW. I didn't know much about it. I sure learned now. I've grown all these years later, and people regard me in the Myers community as the guru of the OTW. Number 102 was donated to the museum here by Mrs. Myers when Al died, and I know it's here someplace, but I fly number 40. I restored number 32. People love antiques. They don't really own them. They may own them on paper, but they're really caretakers to the next generation. And I feel like this airplane that I bought in 1960 for $2,060 from Will St. Germain at the airport in Hinsdale, Illinois, which is now a big shopping center, and there's a helicopter pad there. But I learned how to restore, and through the years, I've flown that airplane for 50 years. And it's still a mistress, a real live mistress, and I treasure it. But you share what you have by flying it. I have flown it long distance. I've been to both coasts with it. People say, "Well, geez, Chuck, how can you fly with that little airplane?" I says, "A long flight is a series of short flights. You just plan each of them carefully. Always land with about a few gallons of gas." But you learn all this stuff, and I've had a jet squadron in the Navy. I had an ASW squadron in the Navy. I was a wing commander and a half. I was a public affairs officer, commanding officer of all these units. And you do all this stuff. The airline pilots in the group are probably going to say, he didn't do me much of a good turn by designing the Flight Academy for American Airlines, which is what I can say one of the more important things I did in my lifetime, along being serving my country for 33 years. And the Navy rewards me now by at least making sure I have pretty good medical protection. But the main thing is that aviation is a great adventure. It is never boring. I have talked to many young people and say, look, get into aviation. You don't even need to be a pilot. It may be helpful, but there are many interesting jobs in aviation. Our whole transportation system now is aviation throughout the world. And I recall the beginnings of it, and you can read all that history too, because it is exciting. We still have things to do in aviation. To me, it's a tremendous benefit to not only economically, but the world would come to an end without aviation. So anyway, I need to save some time for others, so if David would tell me what to do next, I'll do that. I could talk all evening, but you hear about so much of it. Aviation is all around us. I was dropped into the Warburg Sanctuary this afternoon. I just felt, God, I feel so good here. And I didn't quite know how this was going to happen tonight, but I think I should quit now and let others come aboard.